Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us as we begin another week's worth of programming. In this hour of the show, this first hour of the program, we'll be talking about Africa, and specifically we'll be talking about Senegal. Today, many people consider Senegal to be one of the most stable democracies in Western Africa. I think some people would say that it is a model democracy as far as all of Africa is concerned. At the same time, one would say that certainly the country does have problems that it has to contend with, like any country. Much of the population is poor. Unemployment continues to be a serious problem. But things are doing pretty well in Senegal. And we'll be talking this morning about Senegal specifically and about Africa perhaps more generally with Senegal's ambassador to the United States, Dr. Amadou Lamine Ba. He's been ambassador to the U.S. since the fall of 2002. He is trained in entomology, interestingly enough. He's a graduate of Ohio State, where he got his Ph.D., and is interested in a number of things, including economic entomology, in the effects of chemical pollution on the environment, but also on international development. He has taught at Ohio State, also at Bunker Hill College in Boston. And he's visiting here the campus of the University of Illinois, and we're very pleased that he could be here and spend a little bit of time with us on the program today. Questions, of course, are welcome. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Dave, for inviting me.
Just as a kind of a general question, I think that, you know, if people think about the kind of coverage that Africa gets in our media here and most of our media, it's mostly bad news. And I think that this is something that increasingly, I know this is something that increasingly concerns Africans, that the rest of the world gets the impression that there's nothing good to say about Africa, that it's all problems, conflict, famine, disease, civil war. And I'm sure that a lot of Africans would like to say, no, that's not the complete picture. Yes, those things are there. You can't deny it. But that there are positive things going on in Africa today and that they don't perhaps get the coverage that they should. I would expect that you would agree with that. Do you think that people, say, here in the United States get the wrong idea about Africa?
I thank you for that question. I really truly think that, yes, they do. And I think largely the media is to blame for that. I think because, as you rightly point out, the what you hear about Africa are only the negative. I don't mean to say that those things do not exist, but you know, it is blown out of proportion because you know, some of the information regarding wars, for example, exists one or two countries. And Africa is a huge continent of 50 states that in terms of land mass, you can put, for example, the United States, Europe combined, and even South America. You know, so it's really huge. If something is happening in Sierra Leone, they don't say Sierra Leone, they say Africa. And that's where the problem, I mean, start. I mean, it's not in Senegal that those things are happening, or maybe in Benin. Or maybe in South Africa, just to name a few sometimes, or Botswana. But they hear one country has a problem and everybody is to blame. And I think that's where the problem are. This is so important that for us that the Ambassador Diplomatic Corps in Washington have decided that this is a major issue for us. In other words, we in our community, when we really went through to diagnose what the problem here is, we really saw the image of Africa and how to change it. The perception is a big issue for us, and we are determined to work on it, to try to change the image. Because there are a lot of things coming from Africa that is not talked about. Democracy is in the move in the continent. If you look at recently, for example, democratically elected government are now the norm. Coup are the exception. You know, you don't hear many coups in Africa anymore. We had a good election that in Benin last year, you know, where somebody, the actual president, didn't have a political party and win squarely the election. And you have elections happen in Ghana, successfully done. Election happens in Mali, in Senegal. It's been the norm before, but all of this is not known. And if you look at the problem of war, of peace and security, yes, there is Darfur. Yes, there are the problem now with the Congo that is spilling, being regional. I regret to say that's a very, very important issue, and I want to discount it. But still, you have to look at the positive sides. All this Southern Africa now is in peace almost. Angola, the war stopped. Mozambique, the same thing. I mean, if you look at the Liberia, the Sierra Leone war, all of these now have already had election and democratic government are into place. So you can see then where the focus is more like in Darfur and the Republic of Congo, which even have problem. They just finished the election, and the president, I think, is there again. So that's where the problem are. I think it's not news sometimes when good things are happening. It's just the nature of the of press and all of this talk about things that are out of the norm, I think. And that's where the problem is. And it is up to us to try to give the real information to the public, especially the American public.
Yeah, I want to talk specifically about Senegal, particularly about the election of 2000. Now, since Senegal became independent in 1960, three men have been president.
Yes.
The first, President Senghor, was president from 1960 until 1981, then he handed off to his chosen successor, who was president until 2000. Mm-hmm. Now, we can at least say that that was a peaceful transition of power, even though it was one party. Mm-hmm. The significant thing was what happened in 2000 with the election of the current president. Not only that was a peaceful transition, it was the first time that power had been handed from one party to another. Mm-hmm. And the president at that time did something that some people might say was unusual. When it was obvious that he had lost the election, he admitted that he had lost the election and conceded defeat and handed over power to the current president. What happened in Senegal? What do you think has happened in Senegal to make it possible here, where, admittedly, there have been long time between changes of president, but at the same time, they were peaceful transitions. And it seems to me, at least, and I think a lot of people would say, what happened in 2000 was really very important, where the man who had been, he had attempted to run for president a number of times. He was an opposition leader for a long, long time before he won. But when he won, the president said, very good, the people have chosen, and we go on. What made that possible?
Yes, that's a very good question, and you have to go really through the history of Senegal maybe to answer this question. I think there are many, many factors that one is, first of all, colonization period. Okay, Senegal is one of the oldest French colony in Africa. And then the French literally run their West African colony from Senegal, from Dakar. And the consequence of it is that we have the elite of Senegal were very well educated for a long time. Some of the leaders of Senegal post-independence were like the one who became the president, Senghor, and others, Lamine Gaye and Blaise Diagne, all were members of French Parliament. So they are used really to democracy, and the elite, because of the same generation, respected each other. And the same thing, while they are in France, they were also having political parties in Senegal. And then the tradition of democracy on developing program and going and having vote is very old in Senegal. It's a way back. So when Senghor come into power after the independence, Senghor is an intellectual. You can say it more. He thinks of himself more as a professor than a head of state. He liked to be. He's a poet. Actually, we are now celebrating his 100th birthday, Senghor, this year, and there are many conferences. I like to point out we have Professor Bashir Jan. He is an expert to Senghor. I really recommend, if you haven't done it, you know, to invite him to the university so he could talk about Senghor. And, you know, he is the one I credit a little bit after that, beside that, another, you know, reason why we are that. Because Senghor not only helped the different ethnic group, you know, be together, build the Senegal as a nation. Mm-hmm. I usually say that African countries are first a state first before they become a nation. They are state because they have been, you know, built through the Balkanization of the states, and then the government are really copy of the European government. Our government is almost a copy of the French government. But the group that is called Senegal, the nation is different ethnic group, you know, that are there. And everybody can be more loyal to your group than to what you call state, which is almost artificial. We have to explain to the people what the state is, what the constitution is. And I think what the role of Senghor was to try to get all these ethnic groups to get along and to look at the constitution as in Senegal as a reality rather than their, you know, group. And he was very good at that. And not only for the ethnic group, but also for religious. Senghor was a Christian in a country that is almost, some say, maybe about 90% Muslim. And Senghor was able to really befriend some of the religious leader, so that the Senegal today is seen as a model of a Muslim country where you have a big dialogue with Christian and Muslim. There is no problem on that. So Senghor also should be given credit for that. Also, the nature of Senegalese, just to be usually peaceful by nature, you know. I mean, that's not to say about that, because that's how people are perceived and that's how they are. More peaceful than us in terms of their nature. It's very difficult to quantify that. And I think those two elements, I mean, three or four, you can see all of that, are combined to make Senegal the way it is today in terms of democracy. Obviously, as you said, Senghor, when he left, you know, he did change the constitution because he won, I think, in the 80s or 79 and elections. And then after 2 years, he decided to leave and then did change the election to allow Abdou Diouf's hand-picked, you know, choice to be the president. He ruled for about 19 years after Senghor to lead us to about 2000, you know, and become president. And then after that, in comes election 2000, that were like very well disputed. The actual president was run many times and saw that the election were not fair many times and talk about it. But this was the last chance of the president Diouf to actually win the election or relinquish power. But I think to his credit, as you rightly mentioned, Abdou Diouf accepted, you know, the defeat to concede the election even before the result were announced. You know, because he take his phone and call the president and congratulate for his victory. Had he left 1 or 2 days, nobody know what would happen. Because obviously he would deal with his own people that may not like, you know, to relinquish power despite the defeat. You know, he didn't give him a chance to do anything. He just actually cut them off guard and conceded the defeat. And that's really something I have to give him credit for, to do it. And this is the first time in 2000 we have what we call alternance, where an opposition become, you know, from become the president, which is the actual president Abdoulaye Wade, who is has been in the opposition for many years, who is an example of persistence and perseverance, and then who has always talk about never walking on dead bodies to get power and do it in peaceful mean. So I think we have also to salute that. So this is a combination of two men, you know, that at this specific juncture, you know, have come to make this peaceful transition a chance, a model to what democracy should be. And I'm very proud of both of them, you know, and on it, and also my actual president, the President Wade, who has always been tried to use peaceful means to actually arrive at power. I might say, just for the sake of history, that It came also at a time when you have all this technology has made a big difference. Then in Senegal, we have what they call vibrant civil society. We have a lot of free radio, free press in Senegal at that time. And also with the advent of cell phone, you know, coming in, people were able to call in the result, you know, from the booth, you know, while this is being done, and interview people, who did you vote for and everything. So, and the radio, the independent radio will relay this information. And I think that was also a factor. The technology factor is sometimes not seen, but it is has been very important also in the fact that the result can be accepted, because it was the evidence, it was the evidence that, you know, the Abdou Diouf was losing the election too. Yes,
that's very interesting. That's certainly something that I've read about about the fact that because it had that kind of, we had cell phones, which is something you wouldn't have had in the past. You have a very strong independent radio system. That it was that results and reporting on what was going on could run ahead of anybody's ability to come and try to fudge that if that was what they wanted to do. And I thought that was a very interesting example of how that kind of very contemporary communications technology can make a really big difference.
Absolutely, it was interesting to see. And you can say also, I think technology, the internet, have really changed the world. I think the global communication system, everything have changed the world. People are now know what is happening everywhere in the world, and they communicate, you know, with each other, you know, on a political issue, economical issue, you name it. But it's not assessed very well today, you know, what is the impact of this. But it is huge. It is making things much more important. I mean, it giving voice to people that otherwise would not have voice, you know, today, because of all these new technologies that people have, that you can talk to your parents, you can talk to your friends using cell phones, give them information that would have taken otherwise maybe months for them to get through. You do it instantly. And I think this is helping people to make better decisions in terms of what they do.
Something also that I think is true, and you can correct me if this is wrong, that the level of internet access and connectivity in Senegal compared to many other countries in Africa is very high.
Yeah, it's very high, because one of our strong points in Senegal is that our telecommunication system. I think we have one of the best in Africa. Maybe if you take sub-Saharan Africa, South Africa, maybe accepted. But other than that, I think we have the best one, because we have optic cable through there. So we get easy, you know, cell phone, telephone, everything working very, very good, and also internet. So we have one of the best telecommunication system, and that's true. And that is one of the strong points when I'm talking about attracting investors. That's what I'm telling them to do also. It is less likely you go to Senegal not having able to communicate with your headquarters. It's unlikely. So that is one of the strong points of my country.
Yeah. Yes. Well, perhaps I should introduce again our guest, Dr. Amadou Lamine Ba. He is the ambassador from Senegal to the United States and has been since October of 2002. And he is visiting here, campus of the University of Illinois. We're pleased he could be with us to talk. Mm-hmm. Questions welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, perhaps if it had not been for this transition from the Diouf government to the Wade government, you would be an academic and would not be a diplomat today. I think maybe that's true. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you see as the central priorities of the current government? And when people were voting, made that vote to change, mm-hmm. what do you think that people of Senegal were looking for?
Mm-hmm. I think they were just looking for a fresh start. I think the former, you know, government just run out of ideas on how to run the countries. You know, they've been the same party that ruled for 20 years, you know, from Senghor to Abdou Diouf. It's 20 years that it's the same group of people, you know, people like me, you know, and others are fresh, you know, faces coming in the new government. But I think what the at the time of this of the election, unemployment, it was very high. Really, I mean, I think you can make the case that what really did the former government was the young generation, that was really were desperate, for the change, very important. The second, I think, was the agriculture issues also, especially the farmers, were very desperate also in terms of their productions and then the commercialization of their product. I should think also maybe mention the fact that at the time, just democracy, we were at the time when if we didn't have this type of what we call alternance in Senegal, it's a word just to say oppositions, become, the majority and the majority become opposition. It was a good test of our democracy. In other words, people were starting to question whether this government, Senegal, is really democratic because we had election. That's not the only test for democracy. Mm-hmm. And because at that, every time we had election, the majority won. It was really mechanic. So the change will allow for democracy to really take hold. And in my perspective, that allowed to educate the majority of Senegalese about the importance of the vote, to go to vote. Because, if you look at even the U.S., how many percentage of the people vote. But in Africa, because of the education, because of how people perceive the government to be the one that are give everybody bread. They don't understand it's by their tax that the government work. And they didn't know that, you can have the vote the government out. You didn't have think about that. You cannot do it. These are kings. These are people that you have to really to salute when they come, but you don't vote them out. And I think it is very, very... has been very educative in terms of, I don't know whether it's a word, it really educated people in terms of the power of vote in it. That's why the next election, people will really, take this learning to the boots because they already did to try to have their say on how the government is run. And that's, I think, very important.
And there will be an election next year? Is that right?
Next year in February. Yeah, February 25th, it's election day in Senegal. And already, the campaign hasn't officially started, but it's already started. Opposition parties are now in full gear, trying to prepare. So the headquarters of different opposition parties are meeting after meeting, and discussing, how to have build the coalition to go after the government, and the government also doing the same. So we are now really, living again another experience of democracy unfolding in Senegal right now, starting very soon. The official, campaign will be about January sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We have a caller here. We'd certainly welcome other people into the conversation if you have a question. 333-9455 if you're here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We have a caller here where we are, Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Good morning. I just set aside my notes, so I'll try and wing it here. I probably have to call the doctor later on your second hour, too. But you were at the beginning of the show, you were implying that the ambassadors of Africa are sort of seized, and everyone is sort of seized with this question of the portrayal of Africa. And there was a good conference here some years ago. I don't know if the scholars who participated in that are still around and whether you're meeting with them. But it seems to me that the example of Telesur in the South Latin America, the Al Jazeera for the Arab world, the idea that there should be a voice for the African continent. Now, African continent is much more diverse than even Latin America, I would think. Some countries, I think, in Africa are more diverse than an entire other continent. But the idea that, I try and learn a little French, and I was going to say, je sais dire bienvenue. I watched the France 24 has just rolled out, and there's some interesting African news on both that and the commercial ITEL .fr, which is on the internet. But I wonder whether there's any talk of trying to. This has a long history. This goes back to the McBride Report, One World, Many Voices. The idea that news from Africa, news from anywhere, needs to have some origination from the locality, and the people must tell their own stories, as opposed to, you know, most African news actually does come through Paris, Jean-France Presse, and so there's so many immediate tasks at hand, it seems, but I'm wondering whether there's any thought of that. I'll hear your response.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, caller. That's a very, very good question, and I think that maybe allow me to speak on the Africa-wide program that is taking place. And I'm just going to maybe answer your question and then use it to talk more about Africa and what's happening in the continent-wide. Yes, I think that there have been talk a lot about lately about TV and radio outlets that tell African story from the African perspective. You know, this is a project that people have been talking about at the continental level. Already, you do have some regional radios or TV, especially TV and radio, that are popping out, you know, in the media. You don't see it here. And these are in cable sometimes. And I think in Washington area and the East Coast, you do have that. There are cable TV program coming from Africa that are starting to take place. But there is not yet anything at the continent level, the like of CNN, Al Jazeera, and the French, even they have now the French 24 hours, you know, to do their own story. So I think it's a very good idea that is being discussed at the continent level. And I think that's where we need to go. You know, we have to tell our own stories to try to write the distorted image of Africa and tell a different story of Africa. And I think I agree with that. Just to, you know, go from there and talk about all these things that Africans are doing, like with AU, African Unity, which is now the main organization of the African continent that has not only a political program so that Africans speak in the same voice. At least in Senegal, we really see African unity as a major, major, major goal. You know, if we are to move forward in this world, the Europeans are building their, European Union. Chinese is rising, it's a huge continent. And I think that, you know, for economic and political reason, Africa has to have the real United States of Africa. And I think AU is only one step toward that end. And the debate is, how do we go from AU to United State of Africa? You know, I'm just giving a name, but it is where we have a real continental political entity that we're all aiming at. And then some people think we should do it now. Other people said we need to have to go through regional organization before we get there. But already Africa do have an Africa-wide program, economic program, to tackle a problem of development in Africa. It's called New Partnership for Economic Development. It's called NEPAD in short. And this program has as a principle of stability, peace and stability in the continent first. And then democracy, good governance, political and economical good governance are the principle behind the NEPAD. So they already built a peer review mechanism within the NEPAD to allow for independent expert to go any country and audit, you know, the good governance issue, human rights issue, rule of the law issue, democracy issues. They can do that. And so this is the principle behind the NEPAD, because what NEPAD want to do is to create an environment conducive for development in Africa. And the condition first has to be we have to have peace and stability, and then you have to have good governance, economic and as well as political good governance, you know, democracy and others. And that's what we want. The Africa-wide continent is trying all to work on that, and the head of state agree on this. And then with that, with the principle, now they have a program. And the program has divided, is basically trying to have public-private partnership to invest in Africa. And then go away from the aid, you know, aid and trade, no, aid debt binome, which is just the World Bank give us money and everything to do small community works and all of that. What we want is to have the private sector in the developed world and then the private sector in Africa, you know, with the help of their country, the G8 and all of that, to invest heavily in Africa in the infrastructure, in IT, in agriculture, in education, in the environment. We have really, those are the private sector. There are others that are devised for investment. And the aim of this also to allow for Africa development, but with private sector money, rather than all having aid to come. Because if you build road, highways from the north and south and across Africa, then those roads can induce economic development. And that's what the NEPAD is here for. And I think that it is a very good program. It has yet to be implemented fully because of some problems that it will be, you know, I mean, too much to tell to me. Just to have a business plan and also get the funding, you know, is the one that is keeping this program from being fully implemented. But it is something that we discuss, the head of state, including President Watt, discuss in the G8 every time they meet together about how to go with the NEPAD issues.
And you see how far it gets you. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to disagree on this one. The joke that I hear about NEPAD is the anti-corporate globalization people I've met, they call it NEPAD.
Yes.
Because it means that Africa has to be subservient to corporate power. So, yeah. I mean, it's all there is right now. The Millennium announcement for the Millennium Project that Bush announced some time ago has done maybe two projects so far besides building their building. There's a debt to Africa. There's an African debt, and it's to Africa for all of the exploitation through the years. The debt that Africa supposedly owes the developed world is a figment of economics. So that's where I stand. Before I get apoplectic here, I was going to also mention that a cultural exchange is an important issue. It seems to be maybe small after the issues we've been discussing, but there's an untold story of there used to be two or three African music major bands would come through this town, and a lot of it is visa restrictions because of the war on terror, they say. And I think that the cultural product of Africa could be an important part of perhaps even funding some of this communication mechanisms, because we miss this the sukus. I'm going to sign off. Thank you.
Right. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think that I'm going to address the last issue about the cultural exchange. I think it's very important. I think if Africa, has something to offer to the world, like Sengwar said, is our culture. I think which is something that is unique to us. We can have competition on it, but it is something that is unique, that is something we can sell. Obviously, if there are visa restrictions to bring artists here, it is something that we ought to know and try to work on it. We try to work with the State Department about all issues that come on our way, and I think they are now easing all those restrictions, you know, that were like after the September 11 decision. But I think now they are really easing it, and I hope that you can enjoy your sukus a little bit, you know, later. But for the first point that you raised about the corporate, I think that's also something. And then you mentioned the debt. It was not the debt and all of that. The debt that we acquired, we talked to. It was a shared responsibility. The debt, because most of the program, you know, that were funded by World Bank, are programs that the World Bank itself, you know, agree to do with Senegal. It's not the countries only that decide this is my program and I come and get the loan to fund it. No, they ask us this is where, you know, and this is how the program should be run. But at the end, when the program fell, it's the responsibility of Africa. That I agree with you. There were a lot to be said about whose responsibility is in terms of the aid, because most of the aid comes because of they impose how this money is being, you know, spent. But for NEPAD and the corporate, I think that I don't agree with you. What we need in Africa also is investment. It's not because we are going to be stopping the corporate for coming. We can make regulation. We can make sure that our environment are protected. The labor laws, may be flexible, but we can make sure that at least the workers have some type of protections, you know, that is necessary for them to work. But we have to be competitive. If we cannot be competitive and attract money, capital to develop Africa, we will not be doing it with aid money, you know, that the West will give us. And I think that's a major shift in Africa, that people understand that you can develop country not by government but with private sector. But when you talk about private, it's going to be the corporate. And it is the responsibility of the government to make sure to put regulation, rule and regulation that allow, you know, for them not to exploit, you know, the countries without giving anything back, like what is happening with the oil industry. That I, you know, you can say that, but not to discount the corporation. I think that's important. For the Millennium Program, which is the Millennium, if I understand, challenge account that you talked about, that also I don't agree with you. That program is working fine. The program is a Bush program. The President Bush put this program to help country that have good governance, that invest in their people and have market economy and have established criteria to really be eligible to access this money. And when they did it in a competitive basis, and the first batch of countries that came, out of 16 countries, Africa get 8 countries. And then there, maybe today there are more. So that tells you something good about Africa. And among those 8 countries that have are eligible, you have Madagascar, Cape Verde, Benin, Mali, Ghana, all have signed now what they call their compact, an agreement with the government, with President Bush. And it goes as high as 500-something million dollars for Ghana, $200 million, a little bit more than that, for Cape Verde. So we're talking about huge amount of money to actually fund the program that have been developed by the countries themselves. In other words, it is the Ghanaians that said, oh, this is where our priority is, and if we do this, we can have economic growth and we can reduce poverty. And then they work with the U.S. government in terms of making sure that the money will be spent on, you know, in a very efficient way, that what the government, what the MCC Corporation is trying to do. And once you do that, you sign a compact. And I think already Cape Verde has already accessed their money. They are halfway through and others are doing it. But I think the program, of course, was slow. I mean, I'm one of the men that was saying at the beginning, but now it's really taken off and it's moving forward. Thank you.
We have about 10 minutes, a little bit more left in this first hour of Focus 580. Our guest is Dr. Amadou Lamine Ba. He is Senegal's ambassador to the United States. He's visiting here at the campus. And we have someone else who would like to get in on the conversation. We'll do that. Going to an Urbana caller, and this is line number 2. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Ambassador.
Yeah, good morning, sir.
From time to time, I hear, I think, a repetition of two different problems for various nations in Africa. One has to do with travel of people from unstable countries with unstable governments, that's what I mean, into African nations with stable governments. And Senegal sounds like a country with a stable government. So I got out the World Globe when I got in the house and noticed that your country is bordered by Gambia, Mali, and Mauritania. Did I get that right?
Yeah, yes, we have border with all of those. But Gambia is kind of inside Senegal.
Oh, it is?
Yes, completely. And we have Mali, Mauritania, Guinea-Bissau. In the south.
One other problem that I'll raise is the degradation of tropical forests and the over-farming of arable land. So do you have problems with either large groups of people coming across your borders, and are you having environmental problems due to cutting too many trees and over-farming your land?
Yes, we do. We don't have a large group of people coming to our country because we don't have any, bordering country do not have major problem, no war yet, and nothing that can spill over to Senegal.
Good.
But, historically, we've been a country that welcome all the African countries. And then we have people that came from Liberia when the Liberia was there, problem from Sierra Leone, people coming all over the from Guinea-Bissau when they were having also the independence war. Most people came and stay. Same thing for Cape Verde. And then with Mali, same people, but they do move back and forth. So we do have that as an issue right now, more foreigner coming to Senegal than before. But it is not the problem as what you're seeing now in Chad, where you have a lot of people displaced because of the war are coming, in big numbers and become a refugee. The only refugee group that we have are people from the Mauritanian when we had a problem with Mauritania that came still in Senegal. Even though now the Mauritania is in a peaceful situation, they still stay there. But I don't think it is a major issue as the one I think I described for Chad.
Okay.
I think for the second, question, yes. We do have, in some area of Senegal, places where, the farming was... has depleted the soil in terms of the center of Senegal is for groundnut production, which was our main export crop. And I think that was is a problem. And also we are at the edge of Sahara Desert. We're not far from it. So we do receive the effect of it that are now having impact on the northern side of Senegal. Yeah, but we are working to try to address those issues. Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. If you take a look, it's difficult to describe this, but if you take a look at the country on a map, you see that the there is the bulk of Senegal, there is the Gambia, which is kind of stuck like a finger which was a British colony, and then there's more of Senegal down at the bottom, and there has been a separatist movement in south. This would be southwestern, the southwestern part of Senegal. Mm. Once you get around this, around the Gambia,
in the Casamas,
in that region now, and again, it's my understanding that there was some kind of an agreement signed between the government and the separatists, and yet this is not something that has been completely settled. What is the current state of this separatist movement in that part of Senegal, in southwestern Senegal?
Yeah, I think the separate movement, they've been like the president when he came to power, he decided to get personally involved in the issue and speak directly because with the leaders of the rebel movement. The prominent one was Labbé Jamakoun. He's now even sick in Paris and all of that. But and they discuss about way forward, and then look at what they think the problem are, and then have an agreement to try to solve it and to bring about peace, which is something the majority of the people in Casamance want to be peace, want to be, see themselves a part of Senegal. The claim of lack of development might be true. In other words, they have so many resources in the Casamance. It has more rainfalls. Ag production can be high in there. They have a lot of, resources in there. But it is less developed, it should be more developed as it is now. Mm. So more research should be done. And it's being done with the help of the government and the donors. So now the agreements are there, but still there are some members of the armed branch of the rebel group, just a little bit number, have still have held out. In other words, they didn't agree even with their political branch and bosses, But the majority of the armed, rebel group, the branches have joined, with the government to try to build the peace and lay down their arms, So, but just from now, from time to time, you hear that they are still, having mine here or stopping people in this. But it is just very small group. And lately, the army, the regular army, has tried to hunt down some of these rebel group, and they have moved through the Gambia in there. So, mm-hmm. so just go through the Gambia. But still, you know, I mean, ongoing problem is not completely solved. But I think that the major political agreement has been done. It's just to have to stop, you know, some of these small branches that have a stake on lawlessness. When you have lawlessness and control a small space, you can use it for many things, you know, armed trafficking, drug trafficking, you know, controlling people and everything, and which is seem to be sometimes a problem when things happen in Africa. It is there. Yeah, I think you talk about Senegal, and I didn't talk much about it. It's really a country that in the west most part of Africa, you know, and we have known for Goree Island, where most of the African that came here, the slave, you know, come here. It was a major one visited by both President Clinton and President Bush, Goree Island. And then the country says it's about maybe 200,000 kilometer square. It's about the size of Ohio, maybe, and then about 10 million people, you know, but known really for what's called Teranga, you know, the word welcoming people. It's a very welcoming country. Beside being peaceful and stable and democratic, it is very peaceful. It has a very nice beaches, you know, if you wanted to come, it's only 7-hour flight from New York. To come to Dakar, you know, so it is not very far. It's across the Atlantic Ocean there. And it's a French-speaking country too, but there are a lot of people that do speak English, like me, maybe a little bit less, sometimes better English. But the country has a lot of assets in the north. Saint Louis, a beautiful city that is our first capital city, which has a huge bird park called Parc de Fjouge. And then in the eastern part of Senegal, in the southern part, we have the park of Nyokolokoba, where you have a lot of wildlife also there for you are interested in ecotourism. Again, I talk about the good you know, telecommunication system, labor laws, and then all the environment of business that we are trying to improve in Senegal. If you are interested on doing business, it is has a very huge port, good airport, and it is really a gateway to go to the rest of Africa there too. So all of this is just the country that is called Senegal, and I'm very proud to represent in the United States.
We have a couple of minutes left. I want to ask about one of those stories, unfortunate stories that has been getting a lot of coverage, and that is about Darfur. Yes. And I ask because I believe it's the case that the government in Senegal has been trying to do some mediation here, particularly between Chad and between Chad and Sudan. It's something that has been occupying the international community for a while now, and something that a lot of people are very concerned about, and I think very frustrated that somehow more has not been done. Mm. And certainly it has the possibility to involve Chad and to lead to conflict between Chad and Sudan. And recently I've been reading some stories that suggest that the Janjaweed they're not just attacking people in rural areas, they're starting to attack and move into urban areas. And it just seems to get worse and worse all the time. What do you think the prospects of getting this settled and stopping people being killed and driven out of their homes is? And what can the rest of the world do about this? Or do you think this is something that really should be dealt with by other African countries?
Yes, thank you for the question. I think the question of Darfur is really sad and a very sad story. Again, it is a challenge to the world, the same one that we had with Rwanda, and we watch as millions of people are being slaughtered and called genocide. I think the Darfur region is the size of France. It's a huge region, but it happened to be a very rich region too. But where also most of the African descent, in other words, the ones that are not considered themselves Arab, live in Darfur. And so what you're really seeing is that there are rebel groups that want to have problem with the government, the government of Sudan. And it's been, a problem that is getting worse and worse and worse. So, but there are two issues here. One is that the president of the Sudan and the African AU are working together, trying to resolve the problem. Okay, and they have brought some country like mine. We have army people there, soldiers in the ground. Nigeria do, and others, Rwanda, I believe, and they have soldiers there trying to go between the Janjaweed, which is supported by the government and the rest of the population, the what they call the rebel group and the Africans groups. So. No, I call it a lapsus. When I say African, it's just they are not like considered Arabs. That's what I mean. They're all African. To do that. And then the soldiers, the African soldiers, do not have the equipment needed to stop the Janjaweed. So what you see is that even the NGOs, the committee that want to come and help, cannot do their job. So they just keep killing them and everything. So... Mm-hmm. The United States government and then some of the West are trying to get these African soldiers to be blue helmeted in a way. And there are a lot of issues with that, in other words. But it is becoming a problem to do that. And there is a United Nations resolution to try to get blue helmet on the ground. And that is where we stand now. You know, how to convince the government of Sudan to accept the blue helmet to come in here, because they're going to have logistic from the NATO countries will bring the logistic. We don't want the soldiers from the United States and France to come. You can have soldiers from the Arab world, if you will, and then African, but they can be blue helmeted and given logistic support so they can go between the Janjaweed and the local population of Darfur. And that's, I think, where we are standing. AU is taking its part. They just finished a meeting in November trying to address the issue. And there are discussions also that have taken place in many African countries in Abuja. You know, President Wade is very involved in this, talking to President Bashir and then being involved with President Obasanjo, trying to talk to the president of Sudan to resolve this issue by getting the blue helmet to be in Darfur. And AU agree with this. Mm-hmm. It agrees with this. But we want the West to give assurance to the government of Sudan that their sovereignty is not at stake, and then the West is not there to try to break up the government, which they are really very fearful about. Mm-hmm. But these assurances are being done by a group of head of state, including mine, trying to work diligently to solve this very, very, very sad problem. Mm-hmm. You know, I think...
Well, we will have to leave it at that because we've come here to the end of the time. Our guest this morning, Dr. Amadou Lamine Ba, is Ambassador of Senegal to the United States, who's visiting the campus here. Thank you, Dr. Ba, very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave, for having me.